Plus, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President-elect Donald Trump chooses Fox News host Pete Hegseth for defense secretary. CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland.
He is a major in the Army National Guard and did see service as a junior officer in both Iraq and Afghanistan, which he was decorated for and should be honored for, but he does not appear to have the wide-ranging national security experience.
Trump has also picked John Ratcliffe as CIA director. Massachusetts Air National Guard member Jack Texera has been sentenced to 15 years in prison. The 22-year-old pleaded guilty to posting online highly classified military documents about the war in Ukraine. FBI Special Agent Jody Cohen.
Today's sentence holds Mr. Texera accountable for being one of the most prolific leakers of classified information in American history.
A factory in Louisville, Kentucky partially collapses after an explosion that also injures at least 11 employees. The cause not yet known, Fire Chief Brian O'Neill.
This is not only a fire run, this is a structural collapse run, and this is a hazardous materials run.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
The Milwaukee Bucks tried to avoid the cellar. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for Mike Clemens for Civic Media Sports. Tonight, the 2-8 Bucks take on the 2-9 Toronto Raptors, who own the NBA's worst record. Doc Rivers says the Bucks are working to turn things around.
Well, we just got to dig ourselves out of this hole that we're creating. We created it, all of us, me, them, together.
The losing team tonight will have the NBA's worst record. Tip-off is at 7 p.m. at Fiserv Forum. This Saturday, the Wisconsin Badgers will host the undefeated Oregon Ducks at Camp Randall Stadium. Kickoff is at 6:30 p.m. Saturday. The Badgers are 5-4 and need a win over their final three games in order to become bowl eligible. Milwaukee Brewers manager Pat Murphy and rookie standout Jackson Churio are up for some hardware. Murphy was named as one of three finalists for the National League Manager of the Year. The other finalists are San Diego's Mike Schilt and New York's Carlos Mendoza. Churio is up for Rookie of the Year, along with Paul Skeens of Pittsburgh and Jackson Merrill of San Diego. The awards will be announced next week. For Civic Media Sports, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Hi, this is Beth, your new host for The Kitchen is Open, the award-winning show within the morning show. Each Monday morning at 9 a.m., we'll tackle topics, teach techniques, and tell you what to do or not to do when it comes to cooking or the kitchen. I'll also bring you interviews with local chefs and restaurant owners with insight on what it takes to make it in the food industry. Listen as I work with James, Seth, and others as we learn, laugh, and have fun. The Kitchen is Open. Same kitchen, new host.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Trump's at it already, not even president. And the lies, the fantasies, the fabrications, the BS already beginning. Because evidently what we're hearing, what's been reported, is Donald Trump, it's been reported that Trump spoke with Putin about Ukraine and wagged the finger, said, don't you escalate. And because understand, they don't want to escalate because the deal, the art of the deal guy, is going to give Putin whatever he wants, whatever he's taken so far, whatever he's stuffed in his pockets in Ukraine. The deal is going to be, you get to keep what you got, don't take any more. So the argument is, you know, don't you escalate, or, you know, maybe no deal. Only problem is according to the Kremlin spokesperson, there was never a call. And this is, you go, explain how this happened. Explain how it is that, you know, it's been reported that there's a conversation, but it's not true. Fiction. As the spokesperson said, completely untrue. It's pure fiction. It's false information. There was no conversation. Look, get ready for it. It's going to continue. And it's going to get worse. Understand, the Trump thing's going to get worse. Now, the other part of this is on the jobs front, it's going to get even worse because Trump doesn't have really a plan. There was a lot of rhetoric about bringing manufacturing back. There's a lot of rhetoric around infrastructure and manufacturing and investing in the country while he was president. And when he ran before, there was a lot of that. We had Infrastructure Week all the time. They did some, you know, manufacturing events. No real jobs created, no real training, and most certainly no infrastructure built. A lot of photo ops, a lot of cute pictures of Trump driving trucks and doing stuff. Lots of that. So expect more. But he got elected. At least some of the Red Hat Brigade is telling me that he's going to make the economy great again. And look, I'm looking forward to, on January 21st, $1 a gallon gas. I'm looking forward to 99 cent dozens of eggs. I'm looking forward to the breakfast I had on Veterans Day to be 99 cents again. I'm looking forward to that. Is it going to happen? Of course it is, because Donald said it was going to, just like the conversation with Putin. So what are we going to do instead? Well, I'm going to keep pointing out the fact that Trump doesn't have a plan, that there's nothing there, and that working people are screwed and on their own. And I happened to catch this article, caught my attention, that I just thought was, let's say, interesting. It's about polyworking. Have you ever heard of polyworking? I had never heard the term polyworking. I had heard, you know, polyamorous. That's one that was new in the last several years. That means having relationships with multiple people. This is having multiple jobs. Polyworking. And as soon as I read it, I couldn't help but remember back to the W. Bush years. There was a town hall. It was during a campaign. There was a town hall. A woman stood up and she said, I work three jobs. And she was about ready to go into how difficult her life is, how she's struggling to make ends meet, how, you know, she can't put food on the table, how she needs to work these three jobs just to survive, and how a generation ago, a family could get by on one income. But he cut her off masterfully. Give Bush credit. He had the ability to read people and cut them off before they got to their point, which as soon as she said, you know, I work three jobs, he goes, that's fantastic. That's good on you. That's uniquely American. And I'll never forget that comment. That's uniquely American. And it is, because we're the ones who are trying to cobble together an existence, because hooray, we're on our own. There's no assistance from our government. There's no assistance by corporate America. We're just used and abused and pushed to the side. And look, this is the natural progression of what's happened as we've allowed labor law to be destroyed, as we've destroyed labor unions, as we've weakened the protections for workers, as we've pushed more workers into the gig economy, as we've done all these things that my grandparents' generation would have never allowed. We now have polyworking. And or the other one is you have a portfolio career. Yes. And you know, the idea is, you know, on a certain level, you go, well, you know, you're taking on different tasks, you're learning new stuff, and you know, it's good for professional building, you're building new skills, your growth in professionalism. You know, you're giving yourself multiple options, you're networking, you've got autonomy and flexibility, all this stuff. You're encouraging your creativity, polyworking. And you go, no, you're just working a lot to make ends meet. They go, one of the questions they ask is, why is polyworking so popular? Well, the number one is to increase income. No, we used to call that moonlighting. It was viewed very badly. Because you know you don't make enough money with your one job to afford to live. What, you had to send your wife into the workforce? Now we're talking about sending our children into the workforce, and it's because of the policies put forth by our corporate sponsors, the policies that Republicans have been hell bent on, and Democrats in a lot of cases have gone along with. And we as working people have continued to vote for the wrong people. And here we are again. Donald Trump is not going to be the savior of the working class. Wages are not going to go up. Prices are not going to come down. And I'm going to keep going. When's my buck a gallon gas? Because I got to get something out of what's coming. Especially if we're going to have to work multiple jobs to make ends meet. Now, look, a lot of us have had sideline gigs that we've done for years. We didn't call it polyworking. It didn't have a cute name. We didn't have portfolio careers. We hustled a little bit to make ends meet or to get something extra. We worked those extra jobs so that, you know, we could buy a boat or some kind of, you know, addition to our lives, not for basic living necessities. Right now in this gig economy that we're pushing towards, everyone's a corporation, everyone's their own CEO. Well, this is what we're going to get. And the question is when do we push back? Because I know it's being sold to us as this great thing. Oh, it's the latest novelty. It's the latest craze. Everyone's doing it. There's even a how-to on how you can do it. You know, you be introspective, evaluate your options, create a plan, grow your network, evaluate your plan, update your personal brand. Most people just want to go to work, put in an honest day's living, and support their families. And the sad reality is, conservative politicians, corporate economists, and the people who have brought us all of the tax cuts, all of the deregulation, all of the union busting of the last five decades are the ones who are now back in control. And it is going to get worse. So congratulations, folks who voted for Trump. We will remember. We're still looking for that dollar a gallon gas and the 99-cent eggs. But at the end of the day, this administration that's going to be coming in 2025, they don't have a freaking clue. And as I've been saying, the solutions will be in the suffering. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick, and the RickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, wow, lots of emails over my comment that you can't win the class war with identity politics. And virtually every email starts off pretty much the same way, with the person defining their resume, defining what they are, what subgroup that they're part of which group that they belong to. And this is one of those things where my only response is that I'm sure Jay Gould, the guy who's famously attributed with the quote, "I could pay half the working class to murder the other half." I can only think he must be smiling right now, because the wealth class has figured out how to divide the working class and not even have to really pay anymore. We're just doing it to ourselves. And look, everyone's got their takes on why the Democrats performed so poorly in this past election. And my next guest has a great piece out over at Mother Jones that I think hits the nail on the head. It's the inequality, stupid. And it's Republican policies, in my view, that did it, from tax cuts to union busting, that the American working class has been getting screwed over. That's why I've asked Michael Mechanic to come talk with us. Michael's a senior editor over at Mother Jones Magazine. Also the author of the book Jackpot, How the Super Rich Really Live and How Their Wealth Harms Us All. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So everyone's got their view. Everyone has their hot take now that the election's over. But I think it was what it always was. Didn't matter who was going to win. It always comes back to the economy. And ultimately, people are struggling. People are having a hard time making ends meet. And that old adage of work hard, play by the rules, get ahead, that ain't today.
You know, I think it's, you know, to say it's the economy, stupid. It's not really the economy, because the economy for whom, right? People say, well, the economy is doing great. The Democrats say, hey, look, the economy is actually, look at all these measurements, you know, these metrics. And it sounds real good if you have stocks and you have a retirement fund and all of these things. But if you don't, if you've been feel like you've been left behind for the past four decades, you're still left behind. And I write, my book really gets into the way wealth equality has grown over the past four decades. And I think when you're at the losing end of the economy, you know, you don't see it as thriving, and you're looking for somebody to, you know, smack across the face.
No, and this is where you go back to, I talk about the 70s when my grandparents were in their working years, and how when inflation went through the roof, their union contracts helped with some of that. Their union contracts got multiple raises in a year so that their standard of living wasn't eroded. We don't have that balance, that check today, like they did, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And I think that's a big part of this as well. And this is the weird thing. I would expect more people to go, maybe we should figure out how to not get killed by inflation, other than thinking there's some magic switch that Biden flipped in the White House.
Yeah, you know, one of the things about inflation is that the Democrats say, hey, look, it's getting better. It's better. It's better. It's back to normal. But the prices aren't back to normal. I mean, people are still going to the grocery store or going to a restaurant. You can't go to a restaurant, right? Yeah.
I mean, well, here's the thing, Michael.
You pay, you know, $7 or $8 for a sandwich, which it felt like a lot. Now it's like $15, $16, $17.
Well, but here's the thing. I'm waiting for January 21st because I'm told that Donald Trump's got all the answers to this, and we're going to have $1 a gallon gas. Eggs are going to be 99 cents again. My $13 breakfast will be back to $7.99. It's going to be utopia when Trump comes around. And all he's promised us are more tax cuts for the wealthy. And your article, your piece, points out that this is kind of what got us where we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny that I could say that wealth equality is to blame for the results of this election. And then, but why would you vote for the Republicans who have arguably made it worse? I mean, just, you know, this series of tax cuts from Reagan through Bush to Trump, you can just look at the deterioration of the middle class and also the working class. And the actual household wealth of the people on the lower 50% of the spectrum has actually declined. You know, the average household wealth right now, $660 for the bottom half of the population. There are pairs of sneakers that go for well over that. And it's just sort of, you know, it's a slap in the face. You feel like you can't get ahead. I don't think you're going to be real amenable to even, you know, a Democratic campaign saying, oh, we're going to help you out. Well, to what degree were we helped out last time when Biden came? He was going to tax the rich. That didn't happen, right? And, you know, to be fair, he tried to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
But he got shut down. But, you know, the thing is, when you're trying to sell yourself to the voters, you can't sell yourself with that much nuance, because most people aren't really, you know, hyper politically aware and following every little twist and turn and detail. And they might be sort of checked out, and they hear Donald Trump saying the economy is a nightmare. And for them, it is a nightmare.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I hear people say, well, the voters are ignorant and they don't know. I think they do know something. I don't think the populace is ignorant or stupid. I think they're over misinformed, and I think they get their information from people who don't have their interests at heart. I think we've got a massive right-wing media in this country, a corporate media in this country that has a message that they want to sell, and we have bought it hook, line, and sinker in every way, shape, and form, because we're not talking about this mass inequality that's been growing for the past 50 years. And, you know, for me, that's the frustration of doing what we do here, because that was the point when we started this program nearly 20 years ago. It was to add some balance to the airwaves and say, look, we as working people are getting screwed over. It's everything that went wrong with this election is what we've been talking about the last 19 years, because we've been sliced and diced and pitted against each other, when the one thing that unites us is we all want to make a decent living, put food on our table, keep a roof over our heads, and have our kids have better opportunities. That's a unifying message.
No, that's right. And I don't think, just to be clear, I don't think voters are stupid. I do think that they are lied to. And I feel like the, you know, when you are struggling to get food on the table and you're working several jobs and you're stressed out financially and you're working paycheck to paycheck, you probably are a little bit, you know, you're thinking about just kind of keeping things together and less about all the nuances and going down the rabbit holes of, you know, what's actually going on. So I think it makes you somewhat susceptible to some of these, you know, weirdly populist messages from the right. And also just there, you know, I think over the years we've seen, you know, you've probably heard a lot. Oh, both the parties are the same, right?
Nope. You hear that. I hear it all the time. It's not true.
It's not true. But when you know, like I said, if you feel like the economy is not doing you well and the Democrats are telling you you should be happy because the economy is doing great, well, you don't see that, and you're going to feel like, what have you done for me lately, pal?
No, absolutely. And this is where Democrats did have a hard time with the inflation. And you could make the argument that, oh, well, the U.S. did better than the rest of the world. If you can't put food on the table, if you don't feel comfortable, it's not going to matter. So Democrats did pay the price. And I don't think it had anything to do with Kamala Harris. And I don't think it had anything to do with Biden dropping out. I think this was naturally going to be the anger of the American consumer, because we've been sold this idea that we're consumers first. I think that was just the anger of eggs being more expensive. And that's what matters. And I think that's a problem as well. But, you know, the Democrats just didn't have the ability to reach out with the message. And I think that has everything to do with the mass saturation of right-wing media.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the numbers of the exit polling. I mean, 70% of the people who voted for Trump said the economy was doing poorly. And Harris actually won among families with incomes of $100,000 or greater. Now, what I would actually love to see is how it breaks down by wealth. Because income, you know, you can make a middle income and live okay, but you're not saving anything. You don't have the college savings. You don't have the retirement savings. You don't have that sort of, you know, money to give to your children. You don't have that equity, right, in the society. And the share of the national wealth has just plummeted for the people on the bottom end.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the day, you know, as we began today's program off with, the reality is people are working multiple jobs just to stay in place. You know, it used to be you could make a living on one income. Then we had the two income. Mom and dad had to go to work. The last several years, we've been destroying child labor laws. So now we got to get three incomes into a household. So you're right. You know, people are naturally angry. They're struggling. But again, I come back to the policies. Harris, the Democrats in Harris, they had some policies going, hey, we're moving in a direction. Trump didn't have any of that. Right. We're going to give tax cuts to rich people. We're going to keep doing that. And as you point out in your piece, look, we've been doing that for decades. Go back to Reagan in 81 and 86. W cut taxes twice. All of these tax cuts didn't trickle down to you and me and to working people. They just made the wealthy wealthier.
Right, and they sell it every time. They sell it. It's, you know, it's going to boost the economy. There's going to be more money. You know what happens when you do those tax cuts? Like I wrote about this with the Trump cuts. The companies that got all this, you know, they really lowered the corporate taxes. The companies spent that money on stock buybacks,
yep,
which are really bad for the workers. They're bad for even like the common shareholders. They enrich the executives and the major stockholders pretty much.
Yeah, and you go back to the Reagan era, since you brought up Reagan, they were illegal until Reagan. It was illegal to do this. It was market manipulation, and they made it was illegal. And Reagan said, no, this is a good place for it. Because we give these tax cuts in the hope that corporate America is going to use them in a way that does eventually trickle down. Higher wages for workers, better benefits, better equipment, larger capacity, more investment, all kinds of those things. But as you pointed out, the investment that they're making is in themselves and enriching themselves and lining their own pockets.
Yeah, I mean, across the board. I mean, every major company was just gobbling up their shares again.
Now, do you buy into what Warren Buffett said, that if the top 800 companies in this country paid the tax rates like Berkshire Hathaway does, no one would ever have to pay a dime of taxes, anything, state, local, federal, any of that stuff, because corporate America is really walking away with so much that they should be contributing. Are you buying that?
I don't know. I haven't done the numbers, but so when he says Berkshire Hathaway, he's talking about his
investment company.
Firm, but not what it owns, right?
Yeah, he's talking about the tax rate.
What it owns is, I mean, the thing about good old Warren Buffett, right? You know, he's the good billionaire. He's the billionaire that says you should tax me more. But then you look at what he's actually doing behind the scenes, and it's like he's manipulating it so that he has almost no income and pays almost no taxes. He's doing what his family office is doing, all this stuff. The family office is, by the way, most people don't know what it is. I wrote a book about wealth. Family office is basically a firm that extraordinarily wealthy families start just to manage their own finances. That's how big these folks are.
No, and this is what the average person doesn't gather. You know, they see someone like Elon Musk jumping around like a goofball on stage, now the most powerful man in the world, and they think, wow, that, look at him. I want to be rich like that. Understanding, never going to happen.
No. No, the rags to riches stories are fetishized in our society. They are very, very rare, right? It's very hard to move from one wealth quintile to the next, and it's certainly hard to move from the bottom to the top. It almost never happens.
Yeah, and it's actually getting worse. So the question I have with you, Michael, is, where do we go from here? All this stuff that we've laid out, all the information that you've given us, does it get any better? Because I'm a believer in, unfortunately, the only time things change for working people is when things get so bad that there's no other choice. The phrase that I've been using is the solution is going to be in the suffering.
Think the solution is going to be when people, we're going to see what happens, right? Donald Trump made these promises to working people, but he's also promised to do things that are going to hurt working people. And, whether or not, part of what I wrote is that some people are just willing to just let the whole thing burn because they themselves have been burned, right? So they're saying to hell with it, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going to see what that means. And I think that when people see what it means, there's going to be a big upswell of something has to be done. And there's going to be a lot of political pressure going the other direction eventually. But as for right now, we're kind of stuck with it for next couple of years, at least
the next 2 years, right? No, because this is what I've been asking for the longest time. When do you wake up to the reality that you're getting screwed over? Because as you've pointed out, incomes are going down, have been stagnating and going down. People's lives aren't getting any better. Our billionaire friends are doing incredibly well, and we keep giving them more and more tax cuts in the hope that something will fall off their plate that you and I can fight over, and it just doesn't happen. And I keep asking, when do we wake up from this? The sad thing is we don't, because they've really figured out how to keep us separated, pitted against each other, and not focused on them. You talk to individuals, and individuals get it. We should be eating the rich, at least one of them. And it's just not happening yet.
Yeah. Like I said, one of the women I talked to from Ohio said, I'm going to work until I die. And that was because America, in over 5 years, we're spending $2.5 trillion subsidizing retirement funds, and most of that goes to the wealthy. I mean, there's a lot of things we don't even think about, and there has to be a reckoning at some point, but I'm not sure when it's going to come.
Yeah, I opened up today's program with remembering George W. Bush at a town hall. And a woman stood up and said, I work three jobs, and she's going through all this stuff. And she's about to say, look, my life's hard. And, she's about ready to go into how difficult her life is. And she says, I work three jobs. And he cut her right off, said, that's uniquely American. Good on you. And this is where we are, unfortunately, because too many are. And we've got a word. Did you know there's a word for this?
For what?
Polyworking is now the word.
Oh, boy.
We've now put a word to people who have to work three jobs just to put food on the table, and we're selling it. We're selling it as a good thing.
Jeez, you can't. I mean, multitasking isn't a real thing. First of all, you can't really do it. And polyjobbing, I guess you can do it, but it's no fun.
Scary, scary stuff. I got to tell you, Michael, I'm hoping we learn without the pain and the suffering that I fear is coming, but we will see. But I got to tell you, great piece. Hope folks will take a look at it. Why did Trump really win? It's simple. Actually written by Michael Mechanic over at Mother Jones Magazine. We'll get links out on social media. Michael, always great talking with you.
You too, Rick. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate the time. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you have another reason? Because to me, it's pretty simple. One, there's no real media on the left. And two, it really is that simple. It's the inequality, stupid. Back after this.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds for tonight, a low in the low 30s. And mostly cloudy for tomorrow, showers possible late, highs in the upper 40s. Areas of rain tomorrow night, lingering into early Thursday, then maybe some clearing late Thursday afternoon and a high in the upper 40s.
Currently it's 37.
Bringing a house of pain.
Backside pressure, down he goes, inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Saturday. The Badgers take on Big Ten newcomer Oregon. Our coverage begins at 4:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've got a number of emails from folks like, the sky's falling, it's the end of democracy, it's the end of the world as we know it, and quite frankly, in some areas, it's going to be. In some areas, there are going to be major change because the people who are now in control, these are people who hate this country and what we stand for. And what they want is wholesale change. If you read Project 2025, they are telling you point blank, we are going to make all of these insane changes. We're changing this country on every fundamental level. So the question is, what do we do? Do we run to the hole? Do we duck and cover? Do we Saturday Night Live and say, no, Donald, we've always been with you? Well, here to help me walk through some of that, my good friend Rich Ovejada. You can check out Rich's Facebook Live and his YouTube Live every weeknight at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure to be on your show, Rick.
So is the sky falling, Rich? Is it the end of the world as we know it? And should we be running for the hills?
No, it's not. It's not. It's definitely dark, but understand that, you know, they don't have, and they're not going to have a super majority in the House or the Senate. So it's not exactly like they're going to be able to run rampant. They're going to have to work with the Democrats to get some things. So that's a big plus. There's also a lot of people out there that are preparing for a Donald Trump second term. You have governors across the country that are absolutely calling Donald Trump out and saying that he's not going to do the damage to their states. You know, I'm in North Carolina, but we won the governor spot. We won the lieutenant governor, and we also won the attorney general. So there's going to be better protections for us here. But I do worry about those red states out there where the Republicans control everything, like West Virginia, because a lot of people that voted for this doesn't understand. A lot of people didn't take the time to do the research. Do you know that the day of the election, do you know what the two number one questions that were being Googled? One was, what is a tariff? And two was, can I change my vote? And the reason for that is because nobody paid attention until the last minute. And people have to understand, there's a lot of people that don't realize, and it's already happened. Nissan has already called for 9,000 cuts to jobs. You have companies out there that are taking every spare penny that they have, and instead of using it for bonuses and promotions and things like that, They're buying as much as they can from overseas because the moment Donald Trump takes office, he's going to install his tariffs, which, by the way, remember, Donald Trump doesn't understand how a tariff works. The tariff is paid for by the receiving company that's getting the supplies from overseas. And the way they offset it is they raise the price. So I'm loving all of these people that sell Donald Trump hats and flags because they get those directly from China and they're going to go out of business. So that's a positive thing.
No, and look, if on Election Day, you know, a woman asked me if I'd vote for Trump. And I said, if the American flag shirt you're wearing is made in the U.S., I'll vote for him. And she just said, have a nice day.
Have a nice day.
Because it's not. But, you know, here's the thing. And I'm going to stand by this. I'm not an anti-tariff guy. I think they're an arrow in the quiver. I think they're important to use strategically. But across the board, broad, massively broad-based tariffs are not a good thing. And I also don't think he's going to be able to do it. So we'll see where this goes. I think it's like a lot of the things that Trump said. It just sounded good. It flowed off his tongue because he doesn't really have a policy. But I know who does. And those are the people who are behind Project 2025.
Well, I will tell you, I saw a video of a guy and he really laid it out. He's like, you know, one of the reasons why they're so adamant about trying to round up people and kick people out of this country is because they know that the white man is on the verge of becoming, you know, the minority. And the way to stop that is to basically deport every single person of color. And that's, I mean, literally, I mean, you think about the things that they're talking about. They're talking about making homelessness a crime. And you're either going to have to decide whether or not you're going to go to jail or you're going to go to a tent city. And I believe that, you know, these tent cities that they're talking about could potentially end up becoming, you know, literally the next Holocaust of this generation. As much as I hate to think that people could stoop so low. But once again, you know, let me tell you something. All the people that I know that belong to churches that voted for Donald Trump, you chose Barabbas. That's what you did. You chose Barabbas. You chose the rapist. You chose the man who grabbed women by the you-know-what. You chose the liar. You chose the cheat. You chose Barabbas. And it's you're going to feel it. You're going to feel the pain. People in this country are going to feel the pain. When those linemen, when those frontier communication workers, because those are jobs that are really, they're not that great unless you're talking about all the overtime that they get. They get a lot of overtime. When they take overtime away, those jobs are not going to be the good jobs that you want. And all those people that voted for Donald Trump are going to wake up and realize that they did it to themselves. Now, here's what we do. We have to call out every lie. We have to highlight everything that happens that blows up in these people's faces. Because let me tell you something. If they try to initiate the things that they're really wanting to do with Project 2025, and oh, by the way, isn't it funny how some of them, like Steve Bannon, literally look you in the look the camera in the face and say, we told you, we told you. Guess what? That's going to be painful. But let me tell you something. That needs to wake us up. That means that in 2026, we have got to take back the House. We have to take back the Senate. Don't talk about it. Let's be about it. Let's do it. Let's start fighting now, because let me tell you something. We can't wait until the last minute, because they're going to come up with more stuff. But let me tell you something. They lied to the American people, and once again, they won. You know, all of a sudden, remember, during Election Day, Donald Trump was saying, they're already trying to cheat. But yet now, nobody's saying anything about anybody cheating anything. Because why? Because they won. Yeah. When they win, it's okay. We're going to, you know, rush real quick to make sure that they see what a peaceful transfer of power is. But make no mistake about it. If you think Donald Trump will go away in 2028, you better think again. I will tell you, Donald Trump knows that the moment that he is no longer the president and he can no longer be the president, he's going to face justice. That's what's going to happen. They're going to push all his crimes to 2029. And if you think Donald Trump will go quietly in 2028, you better think again. But once again, that's why we have to fight. We have to take back the House. We have to take back the Senate and make sure that in 2028, Donald Trump is absolutely not running for office and we win.
But ultimately, this is about, for me, in these moments, because I've had a number of people, you know, are you worried about retribution? Are you worried? I'm sure you saw the Saturday Night Live skit while it's satire of them going, hey, we were with you all along, Donald. Don't throw us out of a window. you know, now is not the time to cower. Now is not the time to hide. Now is the time for good, decent people to stand up, be seen, and speak out with to the atrocities that I think we're going to see. And as I've been saying, you know, the solutions are going to be in the suffering and in the savagery. And you're right. You know, unfortunately, we have to relive portions of history. We're going to have to do some of the things that have been done in this country before. But hopefully yeah. we're paying attention.
Yeah, my thing is hunker down. But I'm going to tell you this. I think that Jamie Harrison needs to step down or be fired. If Jamie Harrison was the football coach, he would be fired. You know, I got a letter the day after the election asking for $200. You know, don't you dare send anything. You know, it amazes me, a guy that the Democrats put about $170 million behind to defeat Lindsey Graham, he got beat, and they gave him the DNC? And he ain't done nothing but lose. And it's just, I mean, come on. Let's put some people in there that know how to fight. Let's go ahead right now and just realize, I don't care how amazing the person is, Marcus Flowers 2 years ago ran the best race in the country. And 15 minutes after they closed the polls in Georgia, they announced that Mars the Train Wreck Green was the victor. You know why? Because no matter that he raised $30 million, no matter he was the best candidate in the whole daggone election, nobody is going to beat a white person in that district. A person of color cannot win there. A person of color cannot win in Eastern Kentucky, cannot win in Southern West Virginia. So let's just be upfront and honest. There's places in this country that will not elect a woman. You know, we need a smart white guy to go after Mars the Train Wreck Green. That's what has to happen. That's what has to happen. And I hate to say that, but that's reality. And until we accept reality and start dealing with it, we're going to continue losing. And I say no. I'm not going to send another penny to any DNC or DCCC as long as they continue to leave these people in there that don't know how to fight.
No, I'm right there with you. I mean, this election was, you know, everyone fell in love with Colin Allred. And, you know, I said from the beginning, you know, so what do you think about him? I think he's an interesting guy. I don't think he stands a snowball's chance, but I think he's an interesting guy. And
yeah. Why can't we find somebody in Ted Cruz's area that's intelligent and is white that can be him? I mean, it's almost embarrassing. I mean, Ted Cruz is the guy that ran to Cancun when his people froze. Ted Cruz is the guy that hid in a closet during January the 6th. And I have served in the military with a lot of people from Texas, and they will fight you over anything. And they literally allow the biggest worm in the state to represent them in the Senate. I mean, wake up. We've got to find people to defeat these folks. The Republicans are out there finding people to win in these areas. And, of course, they're pulling out all the stops. And it's going to require good people to get off their backsides and throw their hat in the ring.
Also, I believe it's about media influence. It's about infrastructure that the left just and Democrats don't have. You know, the reality is that, and I've been banging this drum for 20 years now. It seems to be where now some on the left, some in the Democratic establishment, are starting to think maybe possibly. But you got to build some infrastructure to compete with the misinformation machine on the right.
Well, that's the thing. You know, we got 2 years. We got 2 years, Democrats. Let's not wait until, you know, 18 months from now. Let's start today. Let's start tomorrow, and let's get this ball rolling. Because at the end of the day, once again, we're going to call out every single lie. You know, Jim Jordan could not even answer the questions. He's sitting basically just tap danced around, you know, when I think Dana Bash asked him about, you know, this rounding up of people. You know, I mean, they don't even have a plan. They have concepts of a plan. They're not going to replace Obamacare anytime soon because they only have a concept. And let me tell you something. Everything that they do will probably fail.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing, Rich. I don't think they're going to replace Obamacare. I think they just want to destroy it because what they want is a pay-or-die system. They don't want government involved in any of that stuff. So pay or die is the solution. Let the market decide. They don't believe in government, and they're going to do nothing to use government to make people's lives better. And I think we're going to see that front and center.
Hey, look, you know what? If that's the way that it goes and they want to destroy the things that people need in this country, that's okay. If we lose everything, that's okay. Because there will come a day. There will come a day when somebody finally says, this is it, and we will eat the rich.
And again, I go back to what I said a minute ago. The solutions will be in the suffering. When it finally comes for us, you know, like the Pastor Niemöller quote, when they finally come for us, maybe we'll spring into action. But well, I think we have to go through this. And this is, and I know I'm going to get, no, I shouldn't have. No, I think as a country, we have to go through this again.
Yeah, we're going to have to, but make no mistake about it. There's a lot of people in this country that don't even realize that they're the ones that are going to be hurt the most. Donald Trump and the filthy rich do not care about the poor in this country. And all these people that live in southern West Virginia and eastern Kentucky, that literally the daggone thing that held their house up was their Trump sign. They're the ones that are going to come to the realization when they can't afford anything out there. Everybody wants to talk about eggs. Oh, for the price of gas. Yeah, wait until your parents lose their daggone Social Security and you have to take care of them. And everybody in this country, when you lose certain things, you are only one illness away from literally being losing everything that you have. And there's a lot of people that are going to come to that. All of you linemen, all of you coal miners, all of you frontier workers, get ready. Get ready, because it's going to get tough. When they do away with the 40-hour work week and they bring in that 160-hour work month and they work you like a dog for 2 weeks and then they send you home for 2 weeks because they're not going to pay you overtime. You can get you another job for over those 2 weeks. Good job. Maybe Walmart. I don't know. Go for it.
We've got interesting times ahead, don't we?
Yes, we do.
So let me ask you last line of questioning, because clearly you're someone very passionate. Someone who spent 24 years in the military. What do people do to protect themselves? Because in this moment, there's a lot of people who are afraid that there will be retribution, not just by Trump and the administration, but by the red hats and the Trump supporters, because I'm seeing a lot of that as well. What's the response from you? Because I've said, look, we've got to find each other. We've got to be there for each other, stand up for each other. And that means people we may not agree with or identify with, but I'm curious where your thoughts are.
Well, look, you know, at the end of the day, everybody has the right to defend themselves in this country. And once again, they won. They won. So they're going to be happy for a while. Make no mistake about it. If Donald Trump wants to try to do something, you know, they want to round people up, things like that. You know, if they start going after people, if your grandmother was a immigrant, you know, if they want to play those games, then it's going to get ugly. It's going to get ugly because not everybody's going to roll. Not everybody will roll.
We will see how it goes. Rich, as always, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you. Hope folks will check out Ojeda Live each weeknight, 8:30 on YouTube and Facebook. Rich, thanks for the time.
Anytime, Rick. Always a pleasure.
Our good friend Rich Ojeda. I want to hear your thoughts. What are you going to do? If all of this stuff does happen, and we don't know that it's going to, it's campaign rhetoric, but if it does, which side are you on? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1995. That was the day that healthcare workers in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, walked off the job in a wildcat strike. Budget cuts in Alberta, under the leadership of Premier Ralph Klein, had hit healthcare particularly hard. A massive restructuring plan called for deep cuts, privatization, and reducing services. As part of this trend, the Calgary Regional Health Authority had decided to contract out the work of 120 laundry personnel. The workers were members of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, Local 8. The laundry workers walked off the job in protest. Soon, they were joined in solidarity on the picket line by housekeepers, orderlies, nurses, and other hospital workers. 8 hospitals across the city were impacted by the walkout. Community members joined in and marched on the picket lines, frustrated by the government cuts. Twice, the Labor Relations Board ordered the workers to go back to their jobs. Twice, the workers refused. The strike spread to Calgary, where more than 2,500 healthcare workers walked off the job. In Edmonton, workers stood ready to strike. Talk of a general strike began to circulate. In Calgary, the union met with management for a 19-hour marathon bargaining session, and the 10-day strike ended. The health authority agreed to wait 8 months before contracting out any labor. Workers were given severance packages, and the government stopped any further cuts to the industry. But the settlement did little to appease the dissatisfaction of the healthcare workers. The strike had also shown the potential connections between workers' issues on the job and the concerns of community members. The cutbacks hurt both labor and the general public and brought them together to stand in solidarity. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, as I've been saying, the solutions will be in the suffering. The savagery that comes out of the Trump administration will be its undoing. Understand that it's going to hurt more than just those people. And, you know, on Veterans Day, my son and I had breakfast at a local diner, and there were a lot of folks who were of the Vietnam era. And they were having a group breakfast, and I was listening to their very loud, boisterous, because they want to be heard. All Trump supporters, all red hats, all, you know, talking about how it's going to be great when Trump goes after you name the group. And as we've been saying, look, the cruelty is the point. You could hear in their voice the glee of the suffering that they know that will be placed upon you name the group. Immigrants, transgender people, the LGBTQ community, you name it, down the list. The glee in their voice of the pain and suffering that will come, they were thrilled about it. They were tickled over. And, you know, once they got past that, they started sharing stories of you know, how they got into the military and, you know, how all of them had been drafted and how their life changed and how, you know, all of this stuff. And look, you know, good on them. I appreciate their service. Thank you. All that. But my mind couldn't help but wander into the world of, you know, these people are around the age of Trump. And they got their number pulled. They got called. They answered the call. They went to Vietnam. They did this stuff. And they're hero worshiping a guy that got out of it. They're hero worshiping someone who is really a quite despicable person. You know, Jeffrey Epstein, you know, said that, you know, Trump's a lonely guy because nobody wants him around because Trump wants to go after their wives. That's the person he is. So here to hear these military folks who have served their country with valor, with distinction, with honor somebody like that. And do it in a way that's just not, you know, he's our president and you've got to respect the office and all that. No, gleeful that he is the president. Would follow whoever he appoints to take them into the nation's capital again to do another January 6th. And it really kind of struck me that it doesn't matter. It really is about the suffering. It is about the cruelty. It's about the mean-spiritedness of the politic that they ascribe to. And I got to be honest, I struggle with it because we're better than it. And my mind started again because I get into these situations. You go, okay, how do you react to this? I wanted to go and talk to this large group, but, you know, we go to this restaurant often, didn't really want to cause a riot. Because as Rich pointed out, Trump and Project 2025 is going to be going after those guys. You know, the people who have retiree benefits from their service, who have disability from their service. Right now they get both and have gotten both for, you know, for as long as I've ever known. The talk now is, no, we're going to have just one. So my mind couldn't stop wondering, what happens if Trump gets his way, a Project 2025, which we now know is the Trump plan? They're now open and honest about it. Stephen Miller is going to be the guy who probably is. Maybe they've changed their name, America First or some, Act 47. It's still the same bad policy. It's the same horrible writing. And the reason I fear the moment that we're in now is in 2016, nobody thought Trump was going to win. So the machinery, they didn't plan. The right-wing machinery, the corporate lobbyists, the people who, well, the K Street folks, the think tank folks, all those people, they've put all of their time, energy, resource, brain muscle, all of that into this moment. Because this is wet dream time. This is where we all get ponies, if you're on the right. This is where they all get everything that they've ever dreamed, and they get to punish everyone that they've wanted to punish. And I couldn't help but think, as I was listening to these guys, that they're on the list too. Now, granted, they're further down the list, but they're on the list. And depending on how fast Trump and company work to get through Project 2025, because look, there are some, they're going to go after immigrants on day one, you know that. They're going to go after the transgender kids, on day one, you know that. They've already told you that's what they're going to do. But eventually, they're going to come after veterans. Eventually, they're going to come after the protected class. Because they want more. And they want it all. And this is where, as someone who believes in the power of the working class, because I identify with those guys, they sacrificed for this country. They earned the right to be able to have a decent life. And the jobs that they have should pay them a living wage. Just as the waitress who's delivering their food and taking care of them. There is solidarity possible. But the problem is, in this day and age, solidarity is a noun. My grandparents' generation, it was a verb. It was about action. It was about doing. It wasn't about talking. It wasn't about going online. It was about actually standing shoulder to shoulder and fighting for a common good. And that common good right now still can be had, which is that American dream that I grew up believing in, that if you worked hard, you played by the rules, you would get ahead. And I point to my union contract. My union contract is very simple. You do this job, you get this pay, these benefits, these are your working conditions. This is reality. And it doesn't matter if you're male or female or gay or straight or black or white, or it doesn't matter. Nobody's special and nobody's discriminated against. You do this job, you get this pay, you get these benefits. This is it. And on the left, they better figure this out quick. It's what I've been talking about for years. Nobody's special. There are no special little groups. My little subgroup of subcategory A doesn't get to be more important than subcategory B. We're all in this together. Should I say that again? We are all in this together. We all do better when we all do better. Right now, the only two people doing better are, Elon Musk and Donald Trump, and the billionaire class, who are going to benefit wildly from the policies that they pursue. Deregulation, tax cuts right off the bat. You think of the last 50 years, as the last 50 years of the pendulum swinging to the hands of the owners. And you go, this is wrong. This is crazy. So what do we do? How do we get where we need to go? Where do we end up? That becomes the question. What are we going to do about it? So what are you going to do about it? Want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You've got any questions or comments, I want to hear it. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. You'll find ours. Also, freespeech.org if you want to check out the video as well. It's going to be a long road, folks, and we're only going to get through this if we stand together and we make solidarity that verb. That means action. That means standing together. That means getting together. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.